The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today on Off the Shelf, my guest is Tom Sisti. Tom is Senior Director and Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP. Tom has a long history in the procurement community. You're getting pretty old, aren't you, Tom?
Thank you, Roger.
don't sound so enthused to be here. Now, Tom has worked on the Hill. He's been a frequent contributor to procurement thought leadership across government through all his various activities, and it's great to have you on the show today, Tom.
Thank you for having me.
And speaking of which, and you worked on the Hill on acquisition reform in the 90s, again, demonstrating your age, and a lot was done, a lot was accomplished. There's a lot of streamlining, commercial item contracting came out of the FASA. And now we're at a different point in time, with the internet. We're also at a different point in time in the government, right? We're in the midst of a transition to, a new leadership dynamic with a new administration one-party control of the Hill to a certain, right? Obviously, mm-hmm. So there's questions about how does that impact the acquisition universe? What does it mean for acquisition reform? And, I thought it would be good to, just get your thoughts on some principles for acquisition reform or innovation or whatever transformation, whatever the buzzword of the day is. And we'll talk about that today, Minnesota. Do you want to open with any thoughts?
Well, along those lines, we also have the Section 809 panel that's ongoing.
That's right. That's
which
right.
is really, really, it's underway, but it's got a huge task in front of it.
So what is the Section 809 panel?
Section 809 of the Defense Authorization Bill of 16, and it was to pull together a panel to review acquisition regulations inside of the department to see if there could be any efficiencies brought to bear on that. The panel's charter is expanded a little bit to take on some other imperatives associated with commercial item contracting, technology. I think the underlying driver there is this notion that really our security is tied into the acquisition and maintenance of a technological edge over adversaries. And that is potentially at risk in an environment that slows down the acquisition process. So I think that's one of the issues being considered. I think you have to look, as people are reforming acquisition, to really what environmental drivers exist now, and what should we assume about this environment that would take us to reforming the system? I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out that where reform is necessitated by a constrained budget environment. You've got
That's good to your point. Let's go through some of the key sort of fundamentals of the environment right now. So number one is there is a constrained budget environment, right? Number two, it seems to me, is that the pace of technological change has only accelerated over the last 20 years. Even now, we used to talk about an 18-month sort of.
It's about 18 months. And that's still, that's still a reality in the environment. But I think what's changing is that in the past, we were the technological giant out there. The sourcing of technology existed here. Its development existed here. Our major research and development took place here. So we had a lot more control over the universe, I think, than we do now. You have a globalized supply chain. You have a globalized technology development chain and research chain. And so all of a sudden, you have a concern that to maintain that dominance, you're in a competitive environment where adversaries have access to that technology as well. So I think that's a different reality than we had, let's say, back in the 90s.
Right. So to your point there, right, as folks would are that distributed or global network of research and development, like, so, you know, you have a company X has a research and development facility in California. You know, people get off work there, and I don't know the exact time change, you know, and then folks in Japan are, you know, starting up, and then folks in India, and, you know, it's just a distributed marketplace.
Well, and I think also, like, you look at software coding, I mean, that's a global function.
Right.
It follows the sun, sort of. But, you know, going back, you have to decide, you know, what your national priorities are going to be. And I think we all are working from the same assumption set that national security is a priority here, because you don't have a secure nation. You don't need to be worrying about a procurement system. I think we all start from that point. And then understanding that you have an environment that's being driven now by internal imperatives, this push to really get our arms around this budget problem, and at the same time, the drive to maintain technological dominance, that's critically important. And you consider our system, especially for major systems, you know, it's a system that is predicated on a long acquisition cycle, especially in the development of complex weapon systems. You know, you're talking years, and you know, the environment may not be able to tolerate years.
Right. Well, the environment doesn't tolerate years. I mean, you know, I agree with you that, you know, the maintaining, you know, national security, right, and technological dominance are, you know, fundamental, right, to the to the mission, right, of the government. But at the same time, you know, say, so that's job one, right?
Mm-hmm.
But technology and the access to technology, or even just innovation in solutions that are delivered for customers in the commercial sector, can have a huge impact on government performance across the board as well. So it's you know, it's sort of a overarching imperative to address the procurement system to try to, you know, to deal with cycle, you know, with PALT, how long it takes to acquire things, you know, what does that mean? Trying to better define requirements, get better outcomes, and all in the context of a marketplace that's rapidly changing, whether it's through electronic shopping websites, or whether it's just a distributed network now with everybody with their iPhones and, you know, working from home or whatever, that it changes the nature of the network as well. Have any thoughts on that?
It does. I agree. I think, though, I want to go back to something. I think that people are starting to gel around this idea, or become focused on this idea that technological dominance is critical. That, you know, they're over at the University of Maryland, Jack Gansler, I think William Lucas, and some others have produced a couple of papers that have talked about this subject, that technological dominance is a critical feature in maintaining national security. So there was a line, I'm paraphrasing it, in one of the papers they did, and I think Bill Greenwalt was on this one as well, where they said, you know, the first user really is of technology is really the one who obtains the security edge. So you have to think if in terms of assumptions, we should be focusing on maintaining the U.S. as the first user. I think what's challenging in this environment is that we have systems set up on top of the acquisition system. You know, if you look at what is the reason for being of the acquisition system, yes, it's to buy goods and services, but also other social policies get affected through the system. And I think we have to find ways to learn how to discuss this, because I think when you raise that, everybody goes to their corner and assumes that it's a zero-sum game. It's not a zero-sum game. It's you have to recognize that those social policies, there's no judgment on them. Those are good social policies. You can assume that they're good social policies. It's a question of, is this the best way to be implementing them? Is there a more efficient,
more effective
channel through which they can be implemented? And at the same time, we can improve procurement. It is not to say that they are dismissed because we have these other imperatives.
Right. Well, you're being very, very, I guess you're walking around the big, some of the big issues. And even the section, you talked to folks on the Section 809 panel, they're asking the fundamental question, what is the purpose of the procurement system? Is it to acquire the goods and services that the government needs, or, is it to, implement certain social policies?
Well, I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to pass the buck on this, by the way, but I think that's a discussion that has to take place in any reform. I know it took place back in the 90s. I think people who participated in the reform efforts focused, and I thought everybody agreed, that first and foremost, the goal of the acquisition process was to buy things. It was to facilitate the fulfillment of missions by purchasing goods and services in the most effective, efficient, timely manner.
Right. And on that note, we're going to have to take a break. My guest today is Tom Siste. He is Senior Director, Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP. And we're talking about acquisition reform. What's it mean for what is it? What should people think about in that context? We're not going to presume to define what actually it is for all intents and purposes. And when we come back, we'll continue to talk about the emission of the procurement system in the context of acquisition reform. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Tom Siste. He is a senior director and chief legislative counsel for SAP, and we're talking about the dynamics of acquisition reform, and you're looking at the mission of government and the goals of government, the government procurement system. What should they be? Is there agreement on what they are, even for more fundamentally? And with that in mind, Tom, one of the things that we talked a little bit about in the last segment was the mission of the acquisition system, and is there sort of unanimity, I guess, and I almost didn't even be able to say that. Is there consensus, let's say, on what the mission of the system should or shouldn't be?
I think there has to be. I'm not sure if we can say there is, but I think there has to be a consensus where everyone aligns with a common goal for the acquisition process. Because if you don't have a definition of the process and you don't have alignment around it, you're gonna be at cross purposes at some point. You're gonna have delay, confusion, conflicting social imperatives to the extent that you have social policy being affected through it. So you have to clarify it just if for no other reason than to unclutter the system and allow the government to focus independently, if you will, on the legitimate policy interests. Because sometimes these things run into each other and you have to parse it out. So
I have a thought on this, and I want to get your reaction to it. So, in listening to you in the first segment, and this opening, minute or two, there's this assumption that, the view that yes, the system has to have a sort of a common purpose or a view in the community that this is the goals of the system. And I would guess you would submit that goals of the system are to acquire goods and services, to maintain technological superiority in the case of DOD, and to ensure national security, right?
To acquire them in the most efficient and effective way to facilitate mission fulfillment, all directed towards maintaining the technological edge for national security.
Well, another regular guest on the show, I mean, he's made a keen observation that do we have the procurement system that we deserve or that we want, in the sense that all the different stakeholders play a part in framing the system, and to the point you're talking about, their fundamental mission is national security. Folks in the small, let's just take small business community, would say, well, one of the additional goals of the system is to support small businesses. So, you know, can we reach some sort of consensus or what?
You know? Well, first, I'm banging my head because I know the GAO testified. Well,
yeah.
John too. John Etherton and GAO also testified to this point that you may have optimality in the procurement system. That optimality is sort of the point at which you have balance in all of the policy imperatives you've laid on the system. That doesn't mean necessarily you have the most efficient procurement system. You have the most efficient procurement system that exists in this context of other competing policy imperatives. So that's the point. That's why it's important to have this discussion on the mission of the system, because it allows you to clear away this conflict and then come to a rational conclusion. Now, maybe you can't. Maybe you are stuck at this level of optimality, but then you have to address what the impact of the status quo is on an environment where you have increasing threat vectors, you have adversaries who are accessing technology in this environment. You know, the manufacturing and supply chains are increasingly globalized. So we have to access them even if our adversaries are accessing them. So, you know, this bleeds into another issue, and that is access to the global marketplace. You know, we have to find ways to achieve the security, the cybersecurity that we need, while also accessing the technologies we need to maintain dominance. And that's more and more on a global scale.
Right. So what does that look like? Is that really, are we talking about like commercial item contracting? Are we talking about Trade Agreements Act? What are the other pieces of it? Is it, you know, the cyber in terms of ensuring, you know, we're buying stuff that's safe? Is what, you know, what are the pieces of that?
It's all of that. I mean, I think you have to look at the fact that years ago, a dominant player, if not the dominant player, was the U.S. government in the IT space. Some would argue that that's
why you had the Brooks Act.
That's
right.
Right. We don't have that environment anymore. So we have an environment where a lot of IT innovation is driven by consumers. So how do you attempt to mandate through market power? You may not have the market leverage you think you have, or do you rather incentivize and simplify access to that innovation and focus your energies on leveraging that innovation in different ways? One would argue that that is probably a less costly enterprise than what we have going on now.
Okay. All right. Well, in that, you know, thinking about that, you know, I mentioned, you know, we commercial item contracting and all that, but is that, I mean, what you're really talking about is the fanfare, which with DOD opened up, you know, offices in Silicon Valley, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's, to me, that seems like, or, you know, the impression you get is that's a lot of publicity and marketing, but are there results there? And I think question I've heard from folks, but the other piece of it, you know, there's that symbolic piece, but also, and just a little bit on the NDAA, you know, is it time to look at using other transactions authority or some of the flexibilities that were in the NDAA to, in a certain sense, go outside the traditional procurement system for the sake of national security? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you have like four different issues.
Oh, sure.
That question. Sorry. But so let's take it apart a little bit. I mean, I think, going from backwards to forward, you know, I think these other authorities, to the extent that they're cropping up, are a symptom in the system. People create other authorities because there's something that can't get done in the current system.
Right, they look for other channels,
right,
to acquire something.
So really, it's a cop out. You should be addressing what the imperfection is in the system rather than trying to build an off-ramp to get around it, you know, because if it's a bad thing, it's a bad thing.
Period.
You know, some of it is compliance, you know. I think that when we're talking acquisition reform, we should be thinking in terms of incentives, because incentives respond, drive markets. Mandates really
distort markets.
Distort the markets, and they distort behavior in the market, in the sense that you become driven not by trying to achieve the best innovation, but by trying to conform. And you know, this isn't it's not an all or nothing. So you have compliance obligations, you have laws you have to follow, and things like that. But what happens is that the system over time seems to have built compliance on top of compliance. So you
a
have
process on top of process.
Exactly.
To ensure compliance.
To ensure it. And then you have duplicative compliance activities. I mean, when you have a set of requirements in the commercial market, for let's say labor policy, what good does it do to have a second set of labor policies and different structures set up on the public sector side if you have a marketplace where vendors already have to comply with those requirements? That's the kind of thing that can tie up a system. It seems to me if your innovation is coming from the commercial market and the commercial market it relies on a global supply chain, the government as a customer has to make itself, it can never be identical, but certainly has to make itself look a lot like that marketplace to incent companies to come in and participate. Because if the compliance or entrance costs are too high, they're going to balance those against alternate uses of their money.
Do you think the government really gets that, Tom? I mean, it's been, it's been said over and over again, but that when you look at them and you talk, you know, the language around category management, that the government's the biggest buyer, essentially this assumption that somehow the government can drive the market in that context. Do you think folks really get it?
Well, I don't think the government is like nothing in the market either. I mean, the government
I don't disagree with that.
I think, like everything, it comes down to balance. And there's with category management, there's an appropriate level of centralization that certainly should take place. It's when the act of centralizing becomes a goal rather than value, serving as a goal for the system. That's when you get into trouble, because the process becomes more important than the value delivered by a vendor in a given program.
Right. Well, hey, Tom, we have to take our next break. My guest today is Tom Sisti. He's a senior director and chief legislative counsel for SAP. And we're talking about the dynamics of acquisition reform, transformation. What does that mean? Where are we going? What we at least need to think about when we're thinking about the federal procurement system and its overall goals. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Tom Sisti, Senior Director and Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP. We're talking about the dynamics of acquisition reform, and we spent the first couple segments, Tom, talking a lot about the acquisition system and what's its mission, what's the goals. And in particular, the goal of maintaining technological superiority for the Defense Department and for the sake of national security. And, but really at the end of the day, to achieve that, there is a process involved, right? There's a procurement process to meet that mission goal. And that's where I think there becomes the disconnect a little bit, right, between the overall goal and actually being able to achieve it, right, the process. So I know you want to talk a little about the process, so please go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, we talked about appropriate levels of centralization, but you don't want to, you know, when you try and impose a one-size-fits-all standard on something, that's where it gets a little dangerous, because things don't always conform. There are different mission drivers for the entities involved. And you have to account for all that. But fundamentally, you should probably start with what's the value? What is the value of what I'm doing? What am I trying to achieve? And what's the value impact of the overlay of a process? Yes, you have drivers that are beyond your control to the extent that they're implementing law. But the way you implement law can also be an avenue for discretion. The driver, it seems to me, should be total cost of acquisition. That when you think of what the system does.
Total cost of acquisition or total acquisition cost? Or are they one and the same?
I think they're one and the same.
Okay,
I know
thank you
like to say total acquisition cost. I like total cost of acquisition.
Okay. You like TCA, I like TAC.
Well, I'm not going to tell you to sit on a TAC.
But okay.
I think you have to, you know, in any case, I think we both agree the total cost or total acquisition cost is really the sum total of all the direct and indirect costs of acquisition. And I think fundamental to that is you also have to monetize the cost of time, because in fact, that probably should be a mandatory element, because if you think about it, delay has its cost.
Right. Time is money.
Time is money. And again, thinking about technological cycles, you know, those have sort of secondary and tertiary impacts down the line. So you've got to figure out what the cost of time is in the context of your acquisition, and then say, okay, what am I putting into this process and what's the value of it? It should be data driven. It should be really, that's the only way you can do it, is you try and quantify it as much as you can so that you understand the process that you're undertaking.
Now, is your concern more the time it takes to actually contract with it, or is it the time it takes to, let's say, in the case of, you know, developing weapon system, how long it takes to actually field a new system? You know, is it both?
I don't think you can blame the acquisition system for straight up technological issues, you know, the time it takes to develop something. But to the extent that the system is draining resources and time from the acquiring of the technology, that's a problem. You know, I guess there has to be an understanding, you know, processes are tools. They're not ends. They're tools that are used to achieve an end. If you have mandates imposed by law, I guess first and foremost, they should be minimized.
Right.
You don't just keep passing mandates to respond to the crisis of the day. You try and make sure there's alignment and minimization of those, because again, you're overlaying activity on the buying process. And it's not to say that you should, you know, buy with no controls. I mean, you're not going out to a crime family to get this stuff. You're saying that you should do it in the most rational way possible. And the processes that you choose should be used for what they are, tools, not ends. You can fixate, I think, on complying with a whole checklist of processes and still not have a valued acquisition, you know.
Or an effective, right?
Yeah.
Acquisition, right? I mean, if you're measuring compliance with process and you comply with all the process, yet the product or the service doesn't meet mission requirements, then it's not a successful procurement, right?
Right. And I think that this notion of looking at processes as tools serves us well, because we start to think about the rational use of processes. So, you know, if you think about competition is a tool.
Right.
And it's a tool through which the government accesses market innovation. By having full and open competition, we bring all players in, they compete, and we hopefully have a downward pressure on prices, and we're accessing the
increase of value.
Yeah. That's right.
Right. So is Part 15 of the FAR a tool?
Yeah.
Right. Is it an effective tool?
Well, I mean, that's something we can look at. But what I was going to say, on competition, is that Go ahead. Competition ceases to be an effective tool if it becomes merely a compliance mechanism, if there's no value add. You're building a deck, right? I can compete among vendors to build a deck. If I start deconstructing every element of the deck, the nails, the wood, the saws used to cut the wood, things like that, I'm having competition at every stage. Am I achieving anything? And I think the other problem is...
And how much time is that going to take?
That's right. Right. Cost of money. Monetized cost of time. The other issue is I focus so much on competition at the award. You know, going back to that study, the UMaryland study, there are benefits to competition over the life of a program that could be explored to keep... vendors who are involved in a procurement continuously on this quest to introduce innovation, to keep downward pressure on pricing.
Is that prototyping or is that multiple word IDIQ contracts? Is it both?
Could be both.
You're right. You're not answering my question, though, about Part 15 of the FAR. Is that a effective tool or does it need to be looked at?
I think the whole system needs to look at it. Yeah. It does. I mean, look, I'm not saying anything, you know, earth shattering here. Everybody feels this way. I mean,
Are GAO bid protests an effective tool?
You can't have a system without protests. You can't. Because look, think about this. If you want vendors,
very diplomatic answer. Go ahead.
Let me finish. I feel like what TV channel is this? I mean, what I'm saying is that you need to have credibility in the system. And vendors, especially newcoming vendors in the marketplace, don't feel like they're going to be treated fairly. You're not going to have those vendors in.
Right.
Now, the question is it the question I think you're really asking is the current system the most efficient and effective way to run protests?
Right. Now, they're doing a study of that, right?
There is a study from last year.
Congressionally mandated, right?
You know, there's,
I'll be interested in the results of that.
Yep. It would be. Because remember, this is supposed to be a quick, efficient look at the award process.
Right.
But it's being conducted in the legislative branch.
Right.
So the question is this really the right branch that should be handling this? Should you develop an expedited process in the judicial branch, for instance? I mean, these are questions that people have to start asking. Again, if you...
Oh, I know people are asking them, right? Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
You know, so those are the types of things. Again, all... focused on total cost of acquisition.
Right. So an element of total cost of acquisition is not only all the processes and compliances and whatnot, but it's also the oversight of that. Right. And do we have the right balance right now in oversight, do you think? I mean...
I don't think you can eliminate oversight.
No, nobody's advocating eliminating oversight. The question was, was there right balance or is there, you know... Where are we in that spectrum right now? It's a pendulum that swings, right?
Finishing my sentence. I don't think you can eliminate oversight without looking at various channels of oversight and seeing if the rationale for them still exists, seeing whether they're duplicative.
Duplicative, that's a big deal, yep.
All right, and then assessing whether the balance is correct.
Right.
So you have to look at data, right? You have to look at what activities are taking place. Are they running into each other? You know, if you really want to extend this out, you could argue that to the extent that you have overlapping jurisdictions among oversight committees, you know, you could say, there should be a better parsing of those lines so that you don't have two committees. I can tell you from personal experience doing oversight on telecom, I worked with the staffer in on the House side, and we attempted to say, okay, if you're looking at issues A, B, and C, we'll look at D, E, and F. So there's no reason to
both do the same thing, right?
The agency and the same contracting personnel, et cetera, in a duplicative exercise.
Right. And Tom, we have to take our last break. My guest today is Tom Sisti. He's Senior Director and Chief Legislative Counsel at SAP. And when we come back, we'll talk about, you know, I guess the biggest tool in the toolbox, so to speak, and that's the acquisition workforce. And you know, the importance of people in the process. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Front News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Tom Sisti. He is Senior Director and Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP, and we're talking about the dynamics of acquisition reform or just the procurement system in general, what we need to think about as we probably embark in the next year on, you know, some whether it's through this Section 809 panel on the Hill within the executive branch. You know, there is going to be an ongoing examination of the procurement process and, you know, does it meet mission requirements, maintain technological superiority? And so, Tom, you know, at the end of the day, the key thing that goes into the whole system, it's not just process, it's people. And I'm just going to open it up in your thoughts on the acquisition workforce and what we need to think about.
Well, if you think about some of the stuff we've been talking about, identifying total cost of acquisition, identifying and processing empirical cost metrics, things like that. All of this stuff, plus the technology that's being acquired, it requires increasingly larger amounts of fluency in technology, in the marketplace, in really quantitative analysis. These skills are always evolving. I think people, the needs for them increase depending on what's being acquired. You can't just leave these people out there without tools. These people have an incredibly difficult job. They have an incredibly high workload. You want them to stay in your system, and you want them to perform so that the government achieves the best value it can from any given acquisition, and all directed towards mission fulfillment, right? So I think that it is short-sighted to not invest in the acquisition workforce in this kind of an environment.
So, okay, so you're talking about invest in professional development, training, experiential training on, you know, whether it's an understanding the commercial marketplace, I think, has got to be fundamental to, you know, any kind of contracting officer position. Not just knowing the process, it's understanding what you're buying, right?
Right. I probably sound like a commercial for the School of Public Policy over at Maryland, but they do have a lot of good papers on this. And
So as part of that, you know, creating structures within the government that, you know, I think one of the biggest things that I've noticed since, you know, I started in government back in the dark ages, Reagan administration, believe it or not, is that the government has lost internal expertise with regard to commercial markets, commercial requirements, I mean, technology, whatever. I mean, whereas before you used to have someone who understood ambulances, let's say, for example, at GSA and understood, you know, what was required to have an ambulance, whether it was the technical requirements and the goals of it, to be able to communicate that to, you know, people and understand what you were buying. That's an area where it seems to me the government does lack internal resources. Is that fair or not?
I think a couple of things happened. So that may be what happened in some quarters here and there, but I think after the acquisition reform of the 90s, we started moving people out of the space, thinking that, well, reliance on commercial items,
right?
We're not going to need as many people. And I think we just kind of shortchanged that. When you add to that the fact that we made it easier to buy and then didn't address one of the complexities of the process, which was requirements definition, if you remember. So you have two things happening. We have faster process. We still have a problem with requirements definition, and we're taking our professionals and move them to different places. I think you kind of set yourself up for a problem. So, and now add on top of that the evolving marketplace and the needs for technological fluency, the need
like cyber, understanding cyber,
right, exactly.
How, or all those things, right?
Right.
So even though, I mean, commercial item contracting eliminates a lot, if you're buying commercial like, you know, like everybody else does, or you're buying commercial things, oftentimes that reduces, you know, the need to spec things out. But at the same time, the rapid change in the marketplace and technology means that you do still have to have some maintain some expertise, right?
Right. And I think you probably have a need for specialties inside of the process. I think that the temptation is to go and just attempt to replicate commercial channels. Well, again, maybe that works, maybe it doesn't, but you don't want to undermine nascent competition for some of this stuff, right, so that people could come in and bring their innovation.
So as part of that, you know, one of the things that is the government, you know, because you get back to budget, resources, capability, and the numbers of people, shared services model. So, for example, GSA's FedSIM organization is, you know, viewed throughout government as a, you know, a place of expertise and center of expertise or excellence with regard to IT, sophisticated IT acquisitions. Is it leveraging the like centers of excellence like that as a viable strategy for the government moving forward?
It could be one of them. I think the tendency in the procurement space, which
think of one thing and that's going to fix everything.
Right, you're thinking you're going to get a silver bullet. You know, the government is too big an organization. It has too many different missions. And it's, you can't just assume that what works in one agency is going to work in another. You know, you have some of these experiments in innovation, which could bring fruit if you have these innovative people providing that kind of training, either through Federal Acquisition Institute and Defense Acquisition University, where we have the innovation fellows and doing that. What we don't need, I think, is a duplication of procurement activities. That might not, you know.
Well, they're quite unnecessary, or duplication, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
Some duplication.
Yeah, you're going to have duplication.
As you have said many times, some duplication might be appropriate.
Well, yeah, I agree.
Well, on that violent agreement, Tom, we got to end the show. I want to thank my guest today, Tom Siste. He's a Senior Director, Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.